There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
You're just yelling at an old gal, huh? Because I don't need anybody to give me rules. I'm my own boss, all right? I write my own constitution. I don't need just some lady come around and tell me she's being some kind of Otto von Bismarck of the elevator.
Otto von Bismarck?
Otto von Bismarck.
I feel like I've heard that name before.
He was the Kaiser.
He was murdered by the Serbian Black Hand group that started the... That was the shot heard around the world that started World War One.
That was Franz Ferdinand.
Franz Ferdinand, the band? With Take Me Out,
they
that
were
song?
Killed.
Is that what I mean? And then... Well, Otto von Bismarck was...
No, that was Kaiser Wilhelm.
Kaiser Wilhelm.
Yeah, but Otto von Bismarck was a... Pilot?
I don't know. It's not in the outline, Marcus. Yeah. You didn't write it down in the outline.
I forgot that in our Dahmer outline. Who's Otto von Bismarck?
I just need you to be throwing random facts into these outlines so that I don't have to be curious anymore. Who invented meatloaf? When was the first shoes worn? When do you want to guess the first shoes were worn?
1974.
Yep.
1974. All right. Should we start the show?
Yeah. We've been recording.
Yeah.
Oh, you have? This has been shooting out to the airwaves.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the completely unrelated subject matter? Yeah, we always like to start with that. That's perfect. All right. Welcome to the show, everyone. That's Marcus Parks. I'm Ben Kissel. Fella to my left is, who is he today?
Man with no rules, Henry Zebrowski.
Oh.
I don't need a boss. I don't need a governor. I don't need some old lady telling me if I'm being too loud in the elevator.
Yeah,
I don't need an old lady to tell me.
Right.
Oh, please, sir, get out of my way. You're hogging up all the room in front of the meat aisle at the grocery store. I'll tell you when I'm fucking done, old lady.
Yeah.
And you know what I say? You know what? Even, and I'll show my generosity. You tell me what meat you want. I'll fucking get it for you. But guess what? You just keep your fucking clam hole fucking all you flapping. All right, I'm going to come over there and I'm going to drop that Lex Luger steel fucking elbow on your ass.
So she's 80 years old. Maybe she's got some liver marks and she's
I don't need
with a
boss.
Walker. Yeah, but yeah, well, it sounds like you do.
No,
it
man.
Really sounds like without a boss, you just yell at a bunch of old ladies in a meat aisle.
I come from a long line of freedom fighters, like Thomas Paine and Oliver Cromwell.
Thomas Paine.
Men.
The Zebrowski Paine?
Yes.
You're of the Zebrowski Paine family.
Yes.
I've heard that.
Big freedom fighters. Benedict Arnold.
Yeah.
Thomas Hardy, the actor.
Ah, I love Tom Hardy, the actor. Yes.
Bisexual.
I did not know that. Bisexual. Well, today's stop. We're back to a big hitter. We got a big hitter.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, I caught the fly ball, mister. I caught the fly ball.
It's an illegal Mexican.
That was an illegal Mexican accent. That's very interesting. I wasn't sure which one it was. Today's big hitter, Jeffrey Dahmer.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Thank God. We're finally getting to Mr. Dahmer.
Absolutely. It's about goddamn time. The most sympathetic serial killer that ever existed. When I read about it, Marcus was even just saying how much he related to him, but that's just because he's lonely on the inside.
Very lonely. Mm-hmm.
And Dahmer is very lonely on the inside.
Yeah, yes. He was lonely on the outside.
Well, he had a mustache on the outside. That always means you're lonely on the inside.
Jeffrey Dahmer he could have been any kid in your high school. I remember this kid. He was kind of a lost, weird loser. We were a group of friends that, we did the drama department in high school, and so we had a lot of friends, and we had like a big lunch table, and we always had these guys that would show up that were kind of off, that would do something funny and then leave. Well, we're gonna find out about Jeffrey Dahmer that he did the same exact thing.
Class clown.
A kind of a class clown, a weird class celebrity, but then sometimes those guys go off to kill 17 male prostitutes, and sometimes they go off to be administrators of an IT company.
Sure, sometimes they go off to war and they kill 37 and they get honored for it.
But this song, we were going to play the song Beautiful Loser by Bob Seger. Because I find it a romantic song. I mean, probably a little bit more romantic than Jeffrey Dahmer deserves.
No, romance for Dahmer. Give Dahmer some romance.
Oh, we'll get into Jeffrey Dahmer's romantic capabilities. Yeah. He was very romantic in his own sort of weird, homicidal way.
Would you say he's romantic?
I mean, he's definitely the most romantic person ever with a skull that has like some skin fragments falling off.
He was sucking on it and jerking off while looking at it.
Yeah,
the
totally.
Other problem is with him is, but he never did. He didn't write poems. I mean, we make fun of BTK, but he wrote beautiful poems.
No, but Jeffrey spoke beautiful words into the ears of the dead, so we'll never hear them. And I think there's something to that.
I don't know. I think it was all being like, oh, your dick won't get hard.
Oh, come on.
I keep yanking and pulling.
That's but your Dahmer accent?
No, I don't know why I did
it. Don't you know my dick?
I keep on yanking on your chain there, but you can't seem. I ain't getting no tree out of it. It's just a shrub.
Yeah, no cum.
So where do we? Let's go back in the way back machine and go to the terrible day when Jeffrey Dahmer was born.
Oh, one of the better days in American history.
But again, 17 kills. One of the most infamous serial killers of all time. This is a bigger hitter than imaginable. This is probably the number one serial killer of all time.
I would say he's definitely the most well known. Everyone knows Jeffrey Dahmer. I remember when I was a kid, we used to play Jeffrey Dahmer on the playground.
And what was that like, Marcus? I think Marcus was the only one playing Jeffrey Dahmer. Everyone else called it King of the Hill or Runaway from the Weird Boy.
I relate to this man.
So what did you do when you played Jeffrey Dahmer?
Jeffrey Dahmer is just like when we used to play Freddy Krueger. Or when we used to play...
So you just played this game. Yeah, just one game.
Yeah, what was the Freddy Krueger game?
Freddy Krueger is like, one kid would be Freddy Krueger, another kid would be Jason Voorhees, another kid would be Michael Myers.
Oh, hell yeah.
And you go around and kill all the rest of the kids that weren't playing the game.
Cool. This is before Columbine. You can't play Jeffrey Dahmer or Freddy Krueger anymore.
But there's a way to do that you could get... Because healthily, you sort of got it...
Not healthy.
Healthily out of your system.
Yeah, it totally got... I've never killed anyone.
Anybody.
It's still in his system. It is his system.
No, but are the mad ones not the ones who think it's not in everybody's system? The urge to kill is in every man.
That's true.
For me are the mad ones, burning bright.
All right, let's go to my home state of Wisconsin here.
It all starts in Ohio, my friend.
Oh, he was born in Ohio.
He was born
and
grew
up.
I thought
it was West Allis.
Nope, he was born and grew up in Bath, Ohio.
Ohio, the land of beautiful women and ugly men.
Nice.
That is very true, but kind of like not.
He was born May 21st, 1960 to Lionel Dahmer.
Lionel.
A very strange emotionless chemist.
Yeah, a very strange emotionless chemist, yes. And he was described as a hard worker, an achiever, but had very little time to actually pay attention to his son.
You never see hard worker, achiever, and awesome dad.
Best
like
dad.
In the same sentence.
Number one dad.
I was talking with a friend, one of the guys who builds puppets for Pretty Face, but they were hanging out with Jim Henson's daughter. And they were talking about with Jim Henson's daughter about the basically, how great her dad was and stuff. And they were drinking late at night. And basically, she turned to them and said, you try having Jim Henson as a father. I didn't see him from the ages of 7 until he died.
I would have loved that. Yeah. I would have loved that. One day, my dad was an over-the-night truck driver. So he would go home, leave at 5 o'clock.
And you're not a serial killer.
Not one yet. And I'm too big to be a serial killer, which is very sad. But then one day he's like, I'm switching to the day shift, so I'm going to see you a whole bunch more, Ben. And then I was scared, and my whole life was ruined that year because my dad was around.
Jesus Christ.
So I'd have loved to be Jim Henson's son. Rich, wealthy Ben Kissel Henson.
Well, they talked about it. Jeffrey talked about his father as a highly controlling, a strong character that he said, and his mother was also very controlling, very strong, very neurotic. She
was on up to 20 different medications for I think she was a hypochondriac.
She was absolutely a hypochondriac.
She was the same thing as my grandmother, where she would just go to her bed and just lie there for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
Yes, I had friends growing up, or like I remember his mom, I forget his name, his mom had like this. Jeffrey Dahmer just brings up all these stories from my childhood because he just reminds me of these people.
I think Jeffrey Dahmer, anyone who's weird, who grew up kind of weird and who grew up a little bit of an outsider, anyone can relate to Jeffrey Dahmer.
But again, let's not say he was awesome.
No, he was not. He was a horrible fucking person who killed 17 people.
Yes, but we'll talk about how that was almost unavoidable. It gets to a point where it's just like, you could have put him in a concrete square from the age of 5 on, where he belonged, but that's miserable. That's not how you keep a human being.
They didn't know he was going to... He could have been a very... Anyway, let's go
on. All right, yeah. Well, so she... But his mother was like on a cocktail, 20 different fucking drugs, and would kind of get herself into fits.
But I mean, to her credit, she was correct in being a little bit paranoid that her son was playing with too many bones.
But she didn't even... No, they didn't care about the bone problem.
Yeah, she didn't pay any attention to him whatsoever. She was the type of woman that would make a fuss over just like the tiniest little things and get completely out of control.
A real mama dearest.
Just so she could have that pleasure of reconciliation.
Well, especially because her marriage with Lionel was falling apart while they were going... So she would take any sort of control she could get.
Yeah,
absolutely. And here's the first story of Jeffrey Dahmer at about 4 years old. Like the first kind of the first inkling that they thought something was off. When Jeffrey was 4, his dad was sweeping the remains of some small animals that had been killed by some birds from underneath the house. And Jeffrey he was compelled by this fucking pile of bones.
Hey,
like
there,
the sound
Daddy,
of them.
Can I play with the bones?
Yeah.
Again, it's a fucking sentence that also came out of Marcus's mouth at some point when he was a child.
Mm-hmm. Well, still
this
does.
This is what Lionel wrote in his book, A Father's Story. He said...
Lionel wrote a book?
Yes, Lionel wrote a book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in 94, I think. 93,
yeah, it was heavily
94.
Featured in the Stone Phillips interview, which we'll talk about, which is probably the best serial killer interview of all time.
That's great.
He said that Jeffrey appeared to be oddly thrilled by the sound they made. His small hands dug deep into the pile of bones. I can no longer view it simply as a childish episode of passing fascination.
Of course you fucking can't.
Yeah, with all the bones
because
and stuff?
Because all the fucking dick soup he was making.
This same sense of something dark and shadowy, of a malicious force growing in my son, now colors almost every memory.
See, I mean, I don't know. He was just playing with bones.
Yeah. Kids like to play with things, you know?
Yeah, anything that makes like a ding, ding, ding.
That's fun to play
Can
with.
Can you imagine? You know the sound of playing with the bones. You know, Marcus, when you stick your hands in a pile, a bunch of bones, and you drip them up and down like it's a bunch of Parmesan cheese.
Oh, you mean yesterday?
Yes. You know, you got a raccoon dick bone sitting on the thing right there. Touch it against the microphone.
Let's not pretend like it's normal, though. It's still abnormal.
No, it is. That is strange.
Yeah, I never liked it.
So let's talk. I mean, Jeffrey Dahmer, like most other serial killers, had a history of injuries as a child. He required casts on his legs for the first four months when he was a kid. He had to wear lifts on his shoes until he was 6.
But then, of course, later on in his life, he met Jenny. That's a Forrest Gump reference. Jenny.
I would have loved to have seen Forrest Gump if it was about a serial killer.
Oh, so much.
Oh,
such
my
a better
Lord.
Movie. I made the smiley face t-shirt. Oh, that's pretty cool.
I went to Vietnam, but when I went there, I killed some prostitutes.
That's a much better story. Forrest, we're friends now.
I went to a place called My Lai. Where I found out who I really was. I am the blackness.
The darkness.
So, Jeffrey, he was treated for an ear infection. He got pneumonia. And he started developing a mild hernia, which at the age of 6, they eventually had to do an operation on him to fix this.
Right.
And before that, he was a normal kid. Very happy. He loved
animals. We
got
the bone situation.
I mean, he was playing with bones when he was 4.
Yeah, but a lot. I mean, there's some sort of like, there's these small seeds, but, you know, a lot of kids. I played with bones, but I haven't killed anyone. I've never.
Right. It's not going to be all about you, Marcus.
Too much. Yeah.
I know it's not about me, but I'm just saying that you can't lock someone up for playing with bones.
No, you can't.
They
didn't. They did not.
No, they did not.
Yeah. But after the hernia operation, he came out of it completely changed. His dad said he seemed
smaller. Which, like, a hernia is like a trucker's
problem.
Yeah, that's an Ed Larson problem.
Ed Larson had a hernia.
Yeah. Yeah, he said his father said he seemed smaller, more vulnerable. He grew more inward, sitting quietly for long periods, hardly stirring, his face oddly motionless. Because the trauma that he suffered during that is that, of course, something could have happened in his head. You know, back in 1966, shit wasn't all that great as far as medical advancements go.
I mean, it wasn't that bad,
but
I think mistakes, we got the hernia surgery down fairly well.
Mistakes could have been made. You know, well, you anesthesia, said
he was also
like
obsessed. He thought that for a while that his genitals had been cut off.
Yeah, he was upset. Yeah. He thought that all of his genitals were gone. He just didn't know.
To me, that shows the first sign of he's not in touch with reality.
Yeah.
We were talking about, when I wake up in the morning, I know for a fact I have a penis.
Do you, though?
I touch it.
You have to check. Yeah.
But that's how you know if you have a penis or not. I go right up. I go into, because what I love to do is I play this game called Sprinkler, where I stick my pinky up inside my penis hole, and I pee out the sides of it.
See, even though it's your pinky, which is their smallest digit, it's still a very large digit to put into a small hole.
Quarter-sized hole.
Yeah, interesting.
And so I...
You really let it go, huh?
But you have to know... You have a penis. You right, gotta know it. So I feel
right,
like
that's about a 5-alarm Zabrowski piss fire right there. We need about 5 Zabrowskis to piss that one out.
But no, I feel like that shows his first problem with reality.
Yeah. And so in 1966 as well, his mother got pregnant. She stayed in bed for 6 months.
Yeah, typical excuse. I'm pregnant.
Peter swallowed. My ankles hurt.
Does that mean you have to eat all the roast beef? Do I have to deliver you everything in the morning?
I just see more like Kissel Family Home transcripts.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Roast beef every dinner, huh? Every meal, huh, mother? Because you're pregnant? You fucking bitch. You fucking bitch, mother.
Yeah. For some reason, they decided to let Jeffrey name the new baby.
That's nice, though.
Yeah, it's nice, and he named him David, which David Dahmer is a great name. David
The problem is the first name was Hamsteak.
Yeah.
You know, and the second one was like, oh, I want to call him Chef Boyardee's favorite. But that's a long name.
It's really weird. But the funny thing about David Dahmer is that in our entire story, he shows up, I think, one more time. And David, for all intents and purposes, has vanished off the face of the earth.
Yeah, where's David?
He changed his name.
He doesn't want to be related. They're known as Jeffrey Dahmer's
brother.
Come
on, though. Think of all the autographs you could sign. All that
with who?
Sweet, sweet bush you can get. Yeah, from all the Dahmer fans. You'd want the runoff.
I don't even want to meet Chris Farley's brother, and Chris Farley is my idol. If I meet Chris Farley's brother, I'd be like, oh, hello, Lesser Farley. Great to see you.
You remind me of how awesome your brother were. I wish that it was you in the casket instead of him.
Isn't that weird to say? Goodbye.
But the problem with David Dahmer coming along is Jeffrey was already being neglected by his parents, but when David was born, he was essentially forgotten completely.
Cool.
He was abandoned by his parents.
Again, and look at this. He wasn't a serial killer.
Because David was taken care of.
Yeah. David was actually taken care of. David was the one that they loved, which we see.
Well, because he was the better kid.
Yeah. Which
he was
also,
the one that doesn't love the bones.
Well, we saw this with Gary Ridgway as well.
Yeah.
That he was the oldest, but it was his two younger brothers that got all of the love and attention. Because, of course, as we know, Henry, as you know, oldest child is the first draft.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. All the mistakes are made on the first draft.
Yeah.
You have to, and you learn how to do it better with the second. You have to give more love to the other kids. The older ones, it just better be real strong. Because if it ain't strong, it's going to be a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
Or a senator.
No, being a senator is a very good thing.
No, it's not.
Very good, yeah.
You know what you have to do in order to be one.
Yeah.
Ben Kissel.
This does not seem that bad to me.
It's not
life at this point, just run around. You're in Ohio. You have nothing but free time.
Well, that's what they said. He was in this back neighborhood. So the way, that just sort of like weirdly... geographically, he was isolated from everybody else in the town. Basically, he was put, his house was in this back on the top of this hill that was too dangerous to ride a bike or skate down. And so, from the very beginning, he was set off from everybody else. At the bottom of the hill was this giant, like, idyllic Brady Bunch town with, like, full of kids running
around.
And he was you know, immediately ostracized.
Well, he's living like Edward Scissorhands, yes, for Christ's sake. Yeah.
Yeah, and he, this is when he finally moved, they moved to Bath, Ohio to this house and when he was 6 years old. And of course, the only thing he had to do was wander the backwoods, and this is when he started collecting roadkill. He started collecting dead animals. He started collecting birds.
Again, public service. Public service. It is not a bad thing to do.
And it's also said, this is alleged, there's some records that allege that he was sexually assaulted at this time, but both Jeffrey and Lionel maintain that this was not true.
Why do they think he was sexually molested?
There's some probation records back in the day that said that, you know, they, because when Jeffrey was caught, every reporter was searching
combed
for
through every
his,
bit of information,
every single mention of Jeffrey Dahmer throughout, and from, you know, that moment back until 1960, they combed through this and they found a probation record. This guy that said that he was on probation for the assault of one Jeffrey Dahmer, 6 years old.
Interesting.
But both Lionel and Jeffrey say that never happened.
You see, because he was already on the path, so it's like, it's not like it, because a lot of times the sexual assaults as a child is what spurs the
I don't know if
behavior.
He was on the path yet. I still think he's just being a kid at this point in the creepiest house in Bath.
Oh, you want to talk about creepy? He played a little game. It was a solitary game. It was only Jeffrey.
Was it called Jeffrey Dahmer? Because I know somebody who played that game.
Called Jeffrey the Jeffrey Dahmer game.
No, it was called Infinity Land. And it was extremely complicated, but the concept, vaguely sinister. What he did is that there were sticks all around that represented men, and the game involved the men disappearing one by one into a vortex.
Normal.
That's great.
Normal.
I could see his father's perspective, though, when he sees all of this, if he ever does see it, is that he's just a creative kid.
Who's, I know. Yeah,
these are smart games.
No, it's like Holden tells a story over and over again. I don't know anything else about his childhood because it seems like it's a big, gray, weird, memoryless, like, landscape.
Yeah, Holden McNeely, of
Yeah, no, I've heard a lot of stories about Holden. But Holden talks about, you know, he was dressed up as a vampire and jumping cars, and they thought that he was just being creative, and they didn't know that he was a monster.
Yeah. You know? Did he have a hernia surgery as well?
No. He was born without one.
Uh-huh, I see.
but he played this game, and he had a shed. Like, his father had an old tool shed that he let him use, and there was a story of basically a bunch of kids finding him out in the woods with a dead cat.
Yeah. Well, that comes way later on. That's high school.
But this is where it started. Also, the games that him, like, you know, they would find him just beating trees with a giant log, like,
I used
screaming
to do that.
Like an animal.
That's fun, though.
Well, no, we all used to do stuff. I remember, I keep thinking of the, I used to videotape myself, like, doing, like, broom tricks, like doing the fucking Jedi broom tricks.
Like a fat Fred Astaire?
Yeah, of course. Everybody did it who had a video camera. Everyone did weird shit with a video camera. Thank God all those home movies got lost to the move. We don't have any childhood memories
anymore. Yeah. I'm sure your father didn't just, like, break them with a hammer and tell you, oh, we lost them. He wasn't ashamed of his son or anything. Not the NYPD officer that he was. He was so proud of his little...
Me just doing monologues in the backyard, just going like, Father, why? Mother, why?
But at this point, he hasn't actually killed any animals. He's always just corpses.
Only a collector.
Yeah.
So, Ben, you mentioned earlier that his father, at this point, just thought that he was kind of a creative kid, and you're right. When he was 10, they had finished with a nice little chicken dinner, and he asked his dad, he's like, so, what would happen if we took those chicken bones and dropped them in bleach?
But you see, he's a chemist.
Yeah, of
so
course.
So immediately he's just like, he's immediately like, ah, so my boy's interested in the sciences.
Very good.
It's like, ah, yes, like a Leonardo da Vinci.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, in fact, he bought him a chemistry set right after that. But then, of course, with the chemistry set, the only thing Jeffrey did with it was apply that to insects and animals. It started with insects, like with live insects. That's what everything started with.
Of course, but I destroyed gigantic masses of insects.
Yeah, of course. Everyone did.
Yeah. What's Henry doing out there with that straw by the anthill?
Like, literally.
Oh, he's sucking up all the ants.
It was literally me spraying this. We had this ant infested tree, and it was just me spraying it with a hose, going like, ha ha ha.
It's good.
I used to pour gasoline over anthills and then light it on fire.
Well, and the thing, but you got to go down. You got to go down into the ground. That's what I learned. We used to have we had a wasp nest underneath our front steps for one summer, and I had a great time genociding all those motherfucking wasps.
And then it's like, fun. Our sons seem to have an uncontrollable need for power. Maybe it'll make them comedians.
Yes. Well, he did have friends when he was a kid. I mean, when he was growing up, he did have a few friends. In fact, him and his friend had a game that they played called Ghosts in the Graveyard.
Cool. Of course. Yeah. Like Adam's Family.
Yeah, that is. It's a fun little game. But
it sounds fun.
I do feel like there's a storm cloud over his house at all times.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. But also, kids aren't really friends when they're below the age of 10. It's just whoever's in your closest proximity.
Yeah, exactly. But one of the kids said that they were out fishing one day, and Jeffrey, after he caught a fish, he cut the fish open and then just started cutting it into tiny little pieces because he was absolutely fascinated with anything going on the inside of an animal.
See, this is where I can't touch the fish. My friends always had to unhook the fish whenever I catch one. I don't like fish.
You must have been bad at the fishing trips then.
I hated the fish. I hated the whole thing. It's disgusting. I couldn't put the worm on. None of that.
Well, this is also at the time, you know, we're starting to get closer to high school, and that's when his fascination with animals and roadkill really starts to get out of control.
That's what I say. The age of 14 is when the whole thing flipped.
Yeah, 14 is when it flipped. So let's hear Dahmer himself during the Stone Phillips interview talking about his fascination with animals.
In ninth grade, in biology class, we had the usual dissection of fetal pigs. I took the remains of that home and kept the skeleton of it. And I just started branching out dogs, cats. I suppose it could have turned into a normal hobby like taxidermy, but it didn't. It veered off into this. Why, I don't know. All I know is that I wanted to see what the insides of these animals looked like.
Was there some pleasure in the cutting open of the animal?
Yes, there was. No sexual pleasure, but just it's hard to describe.
Sense of power, sense of control?
I suppose that's a good way of putting it, yeah. Yeah.
I feel like Jeffrey Dahmer taxidermy would have been amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like bringing a corpse to the tall man from Phantasm. Yes. Oh, that's a nice one.
Could you think about how happy and fulfilled you would have been?
Oh, yeah.
These people bringing a corpse is like, Maria, good to see you again. Oh, this is a fantastic deer. Leave me alone with it. Leave me alone with it.
Our taxidermist is kind of creepy with the deer there every time we...
Martha, I hate to say it, but all taxidermists are creepy.
Oh, okay.
All right, that's how they're supposed to be. If they're not that way, they're not doing their job right.
Okay.
All right, let's go to the Brat Festival and hang out with our son, Bradley.
I intend to get too drunk to drive, but I drive anyway.
So now we arrive at high school.
But then Lionel goes on to say, after he talks about this, and he literally, because it's like his father's just standing there stone-faced during that whole fucking interview.
2 hours.
And really, for 2 hours.
Yeah.
But he's just like, you know, he says the same thing. He's like, I would understand if you wanted to see the guts the one time, but it's all the other time.
It's all about the guts. Yeah, so you continue with the guts.
So right now we're in high school. What's fascinating about Jeffrey Dahmer, what's actually great about it, is that we have more than any other serial killer in history. Jeffrey Dahmer is the one that we have the most insight into because he's the one that has the most witnesses, the most people, the people most willing to talk about what kind of person he was.
Mostly because he was such an approachable guy.
Yeah, like, he had friends.
Well, he was boozing the entire time. He's at 14. Well, during around this time, he started to fall in love with the insides of animals. By the way, did you ask your teacher to take home the pig?
No, you steal the pig.
You steal the pig.
Yeah. You take it out of the trash can.
Do you mind if I take this home with me? I don't. I suppose you just take it out of the garbage can there.
But
he was boozing up at this point.
Oh my God, he started at 14. Like they said that he wore this army fatigue jacket.
He was a cool kid.
Yeah, I mean, well,
I mean.
What, I mean, a guy by Midwestern standard, army fatigue jacket, you got a little flask of gin, you're 14, you're kind of a cool kid.
Yeah, but he didn't have a little flask of gin. He was powerhousing bottles of scotch.
He was.
Yeah, he had an army fatigue jacket where he kept a little bottle of scotch. He also kept a bottle in his locker. On one occasion, a classmate asked him, like, I mean, he was drinking gin at this moment. He was drinking gin, and they asked him, you know, what is that? And he just said, it's my medicine.
Yeah. I love that this guy, it's almost like Benjamin Button. He just, he's like a 70-year-old man. It's my medicine. Now, can we get back to learning the ABCs?
I feel like I've also heard you say the same thing while you're like blackout drunk.
My medicine. Yeah.
One of his classmates, he recalled a moment when they were sophomores in high school. It was 8 a.m. and Jeffrey had a styrofoam cup full of scotch. And she said, I sort of smelled his cup and I thought, that's interesting. And then he just sat there in class and drank scotch.
But
somebody could have taken that 16-year-old kid and asked him, why are you drinking scotch?
He's Spicoli. He's one phone call away from ordering a large anchovy pizza.
Yeah.
He's a cool kid.
He just could have made one step towards being awesome, but he didn't. Instead, he was, you know, fantasizing about the jogger that was running past his house every day.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so he was he was a class clown.
But what he was...
He was drunk.
Well, yeah. We said he was a class gimmicky celebrity.
Yeah.
And he was the guy that everybody loved to make fun of. They would put him in the back of yearbook photos, and then everyone would get all upset. Like, the guy who wrote My Friend Jeffrey...
Best Durf.
Durf.
Brad Durfman.
Durf Guck.
I think he just goes as Durf.
Yeah. But he's a cartoonist who wrote, like, basically, but he started drawing cartoons in high school and basically created this character of Jeffrey Dahmer for their high school that became their, like, unofficial mascot.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, we had kids like that.
Was Jeffrey those kids who would be like, here's a worm, $4 on the playground, suck it down, stuff like that? Was he doing things like that?
Not really. He was more just, like, they would get him to do really weird things. Because as they say in the book, his mother had this interior decorator that used to come over and over again to the house, and the interior decorator had cerebral palsy.
And so he used to do this impression of the going, like, would you like to buy some dwapes?
There you go. Bah! Bah! And they used to, they even had a name for it. They called it doing a Dahmer. Yeah, they described his, like, his sense of humor as bizarre, weird, and oftentimes cruel.
Maybe a little bit morbid, huh? Kind of a morbid guy.
And I have a list of some Dahmerisms from the book.
Yeah. Oh, so he was a nice celebrity there.
No,
yeah.
He was just like this is how he found any sort of acceptance. He would say stuff like, they have a list of just stuff he'd say, so it would be like, bah! Hello, is Jack there? What you knowing? Gimme Flappy. Stick pile, duck waiter, the eminent Dr. E. You would say all this weird shit, but I had friends that would do stuff like this. Has anyone seen Bruce? Huh? There's Bruce. This has been known to have been said to be true. Oh, yeah. This has been known to have been said to be true.
See, this stuff didn't fly in Texas because I was kind of like this in junior high. I was this kid in junior high.
Right.
Just super weird that kids would fucking, like, just ask me to do, like, weird shit, and I'd fucking do it. Just because I love the attention, and I was trying to find some sort of, you know, niche because everyone hated me.
But there's a fine line between having that and being, I mean, like, because I was class clown. You know what I mean? Like, of course. That's what I got pulled back and forth to do the Chris Farley impression.
Right.
But that made that, I learned that could get you friends and girlfriends.
It can also get you out of a subway ride when you're surrounded by a group of African-American youths. Of course, that's a good story of Henry Zebrowski having to do Chris Farley impression. Or
so
he
didn't
get
the shit beat out of me by a bunch of jack 17-year-olds.
But of course, he was 27 at the time.
Of course.
Henry Zebrowski.
So Jeffrey Dahmer at 14, this is also when he realized that he was gay.
Right. Of course.
That, as most people do. But the thing is about it is that, you know, back to the fetal pigs, when he started to jerk off, he would think of the fetal pigs. He would think of the mutilated animal remains.
Right.
So
that was more acceptable to him than being gay.
Yeah. So when his sexual awakening started coming, when he did realize that he was gay, when he would think about sex, it became fused. Like, these violent images became fused together in a way that was just completely intractable later on in life.
We talk about this all the time. Every one of these, that's pretty much the the moment it's too late for these serial killers is the moment it gets stuck into their adolescent sexual drive.
Right.
Once the violence becomes a key to their... Because to him, it wasn't violence as much it was the end result.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
was... Oh, he says this over and over again. It's like it's about, it was about control. It was about having a thing that can't say no.
Yeah.
And a fetal pig cannot say no.
No, no. It just goes... That's like if it was alive.
That's it. Yeah. So at this point, he's being validated for all the wrong reasons, right? He's just acting like a total freak. He's getting boozed up all the time, and he's jacking off to fetal pigs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and he also had his prom date. I mean, how many times do you get a testimony from a serial killer's prom date?
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Her I can't believe we got a prom date. No. I didn't get a prom date.
Wait, wow. He got a prom date with Bridget Geiger?
Bridget Geiger sounds beautiful. Why didn't I get a I was class clown. I was the rowdiest and the loudest. But I got
those too.
Like, you
got those
like too. You were an uncontrollable drunk.
No.
It was 360 pounds. That was terrifying.
Shut up. No, I can't. Dahmer got a. Whatever. I'm over prom. The fact that I had to go alone. I had a good goddamn time that night.
Well, Dahmer didn't give a shit about prom because in the middle of prom, he just left to go get a hamburger.
Yeah.
He left his date there. He went and got a hamburger, came back to pick her up, and there was just fast food wrappers because I guess he'd ate two or three hamburgers.
This guy is so cool. Fuck it, babe. I'm going to get a burger. This is the Fonz. This is the Fonzie move.
And now he's Jughead.
Oh, he's the best. Boozed up. Everyone loves him.
It's the way you're looking at it. It's the other angle that you're looking at. It's from the other angle when you look at, you know, how it was all just a cover. He was wearing a vague human mask to cover a vat of deep, dark secrets.
Yeah, right. Well, some people say that it was very possible that Jeffrey was autistic.
Oh, yeah.
That he was autistic. I mean, the two diagnoses that I kept seeing over and over again was autism and borderline personality disorder, which borderline very much makes sense. It's a definite feeling of like impropriety. It's not being able to read people's emotions.
You know what I've also heard is a really accurate description I was reading about. It's like a disease called being wackety schmackety.
Oh, wackety schmackety.
He may have had that disease as well.
And if you want to talk about impropriety and a desire to connect with others, but having no idea how to do it, all you have to look at is his first obsession, the jogger.
Yes.
Now, jogger is creepy as shit. What he used to do is he would sit on the side of the road and he would watch this jogger that ran by his house every day. And he would just sit there.
Tight balls just flipping up and down inside his tiny red shorts.
Oh, yeah.
Broad chest, thick mustache.
Early 70s, mid 70s of this time?
This is by the mid to late 70s.
Yeah, he's got those high shorts.
Really
high
shorts.
Used to wear. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thick, coarse blonde hair off his tight thighs.
And so Jeffrey, he's sitting there every day and he's just watching this guy from the bushes just sweating. And then one day he decides, and so he's starting to get these violent fantasies and they're starting to get stronger and stronger.
Well, he said too, it's like the way it started was like it wasn't killing them. It was the having them. You would just see him dead in his bed and he'd just like jerk off just thinking about him being dead in the bed.
Yeah. And so one day he decides he's going through with it. And he brings a baseball bat to his little hidey hole. But that fucking jogger, so goddamn lucky. I don't know if he was hungover or what, but that day he did not jog past. The first day in months that he did not jog past.
Yeah.
And so he lived.
Sometimes, I mean, I think the jogger still would have been fine because Dahmer was probably, you know, half drunk on his own. And then he's just chasing after him with a bat. And then the jogger's just like, I'm so much in better shape than you because you're just a drunkard.
The big thing about him, though, is that his father got him obsessed with weightlifting at a very young age. His father was saying to him, hey, you should do something physical. So Jeffrey Dahmer had been lifting weights since he was 13. He was like 6'4". He was fucking huge.
Yeah.
Jeffrey, that was like they never understood why he'd be... Because they used to call him Dumber. They used to beat him up and call him Dumber, of course. And like all of his friends in high school would say the same thing of just being like, we were all just afraid for the day that he'd snap because he was built like a fucking tool shed.
Yeah.
He was huge.
Yeah, his friends in high school said that he was either going to snap or most of them actually just ended... They just assumed that one day they would hear Dahmer killed himself.
Yeah,
like that was the most likely scenario that everyone... Like they just... Everyone assumed that, you know, a couple years down the road that Dahmer would just end up
up dead from a gunshot wound.
How does that conversation go? Be like, honey, I think Jeffrey's a little bit strange. You know, he seems to have like violent tendencies and loves bones. What should we do?
What was it, honey? I'm sorry. I was looking at my newspaper.
Let's get him stronger. Let's make him stronger because he seems... Let's get him more dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the guy that you just... No, only yogurt.
I signed him up for a katana blade class.
Yes.
At the local Japanese auditorium school.
It's getting him real nice and dangerous, huh?
And, you know, of course, Jeffrey Dahmer, he graduates high school. Very high IQ, very low grades.
Mm.
Did he have a high IQ?
He did. Yeah, he did have a very high IQ, yeah. But
I'm sure he wasn't doing homework. He wasn't trying very hard.
No, he was just drunk.
He was beating down his fucking creeping in fantasies of the dead every single night.
If homosexuality at this time was more accepted, he wouldn't have had to go to the pig thoughts. He could have just thought about a male rump.
But then later on when we're going to see when we get to it is that when he was finally like out and about, like he had such a hard time meeting and talking to people. That's what really what drove him to do it.
Yeah.
Was it wasn't that he was afraid to be gay because he started going to gay bars later on.
I know where he went, Mad Planet, where I used to go all the time in college.
What was the other one? That was Club 219, which
Club
is like,
219. Yeah, Jesus. Yeah.
And
we
get into the Milwaukee stuff. I had a friend who actually got to meet him. It was a Michael Jackson impersonator, and he shook Jeffrey Dahmer's hands, and Jeffrey said, "I loved your performance so much. Do you want to go back to my place?"
Yeah.
My friend's friend. He said, "Absolutely not."
No. So, thank you so much thank you for being a fan.
But that's what
I'll see ya.
Yeah, he used to just go to this gay bar and just, I love the way you moved. Do you want to go back to my place? And that was it. Those were like the only sentences he ever said.
Cool.
And then he would just get him shit-faced drunk.
Yeah.
Which is Wisconsin courtship. Well,
yeah, you would have been born if it wasn't being shit.
Oh, I would have gone home with him.
So it said after he graduates high school, 3 weeks after he graduates high school, his parents are going through a horrible divorce, an absolutely terrible divorce. He's been essentially abandoned. He's been living at home alone for 3 months, and he's out of high school 3 weeks. And so, that's when the first murder occurs.
Do we want to hear? Yeah, so yeah. We'll hear from Jeffrey Dahmer how his fantasies built to a reality. Yeah.
Here we go.
From 15 on, I had this reoccurring fantasy of meeting a hitchhiker on the road.
Mm.
And of taking him hostage and doing what I wanted with him. About 3 years later, I was 18 years old, driving home. I saw this hitchhiker about a mile from my house. Thought to myself, should I stop and pick him up or should I just keep on going? I wish I just kept on going, but I didn't. I turned around, picked him up, and that's when the nightmare became a reality.
Damn. And this is, you know, He pulled what serial killers like to call pulling a large march.
Yep, pulling a large march. Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yep, 18-year-old Stephen Hicks had decided he was going to hitchhike his way to a rock concert. We don't know which concert.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah. Never
we
got
don't
there.
Know. Come on, who could have it been?
Yeah.
Bad Company?
It was one of those terrible bands.
Yeah. So we don't know which concert it was, but he was hitchhiking back. Jeffrey Dahmer picked him up and said, like, hey, you want to go back to my place
like
for
moves.
Some beers?
You want to come back to my place.
That's it.
He said, let's go back to my place. Let's have some beers. You know, I've got the whole house to myself. They go back. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey said that he has no idea what they talked about leading up to actually the sex. He just says, we got drunk. We had sex. And the guy said, like, all right, well, I'm going to get out of here now. Like, I got to go.
I already did all the shit I'd never wanted to do before, but somehow ended up doing it. So, you know, I'm going to go. I'm going to question my fucking choices out on the highway. But I'll see you soon, buddy.
Yep. Just going to get back to hitching then. Very good.
So, Jeffrey.
Oh,
and
no, don't go.
And at this point, he said the guy wanted to leave, and I didn't want him to leave.
No, then he stays. Yeah.
So then Jeffrey hits him with a barbell, you know, from his weightlifting set. And after a brief scuffle, they started wrestling around. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey hits him again, knocks him unconscious, and strangles him.
Yep,
and strangles him dead. And so The corpse is down on the ground. He removed the guy's clothing. He started caressing and kissing the body.
Yeah, yeah.
Lay down beside him. And even though he had just fucked, this guy's virile, jerked off onto the guy.
Well, he's a young man. He's 18 years old at this point. You know, you can do that. So he was living alone his senior year of high school for 3 months, right?
Yeah, I mean, possibly longer. I don't know exactly the exact time period. But yeah, he was living alone for, most of high school.
Yeah, if he was poorly, it would have been the coolest summer of everybody's lives. But it wasn't.
I'm going to parlay that into huge parties, things like that.
So he took the body down to the crawl space, cut it into pieces. He put all the severed parts in triple-lined garbage bags. Burned the idea and the clothing in a trash barrel behind the house. He dumped the bags into a ravine 4 miles away. Years later, he would go back after he got out of the army. He went back to the scene of the crime. He found the bones and he pulverized the bones with a sledgehammer and then scattered them all around.
Well, because this is also not only is it just getting rid of the body, it's destroying the crime.
Yeah,
it's him trying to then, because what we'll learn is that he spent the rest of this latency period between this and his next official kill, he spent it trying to push all his feelings down into a fucking barrel.
And it's sort of ironic that he destroyed all the bones, because I mean, he kept every other piece of every murder after this one.
But that
he
showed how pretty important much everything. It was.
Yeah. No, it's this one and the second one. He's still trying to figure out what he's wanting to do. The second one, he also gets rid of.
You know, it's like Jeffrey Dahmer did everything opposite to like how Fog Hat envisioned America.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe that was the concert that I was going to go see.
And this, you also see, we see it in serial killers time and time again. He got stopped by the cops with the body in his car. The cops stopped him. He was a little bit drunk. The cops
this is Wisconsin, though.
Yeah. Of course, this is Wisconsin in 1978. So everyone's driving around
a good,
little bit
solid
drunk.
White kid, a little bit drunk. That's how all white kids should be.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing. The cops they pulled him over to make sure he was just a little bit drunk. You know? We don't want none of them sober drivers around here stuffing up traffic.
So as we'll find out later, only three of Jeffrey's 19 victims were white. His first two were white and his last one were white. So the treatment that the white kid got, police retraced Hicks' entire route. They interviewed everyone. The family offered a $2,500 reward. His name was entered into a national computer network.
Yeah, $2,500 is literally $1 million now.
Yeah, and national computer network in 1978.
Sort of like Facebook. It's kind of cool.
And so his parents divorced. His mother moved to Chippewa Falls with his brother David. She got a degree of a Bachelor of Arts in speech at the University of Wisconsin.
So she's flourishing. She's getting her groove
back. Yeah, she's getting the hell out of there. But here's what's funny. When Jeffrey was caught in 1991, the Chippewa Herald Telegram, nothing had ever happened in Chippewa Falls. So the headline they ran was, "Mother of accused mass murderer lived here."
Wow, isn't that exciting? There's a good brewery in Chippewa Falls.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So Jeffrey, he graduates high school. He goes to Ohio State for business studies. Of course, he does nothing but get drunk. They said that his dorm room was nothing but empty liquor bottles.
Has anyone ever met a good business major? I haven't. They're all running from something or just frat guys.
He's having fun.
Absolutely. So he lasts 6 months in college. And also in 1978, Lionel marries Sherry Jordan, who a friend described as the epitome of the wicked stepmother.
Just being born with the name Sherry makes you bad.
And so 5 days after his father marries Sherry, Jeffrey says, "Fuck this, I'm going to the army."
And he goes into the army.
And this, we were saying just this before in another episode. We were talking about, there was some episode we were talking about this too, which is like, he should have been in the army. If we're going to have anybody in the
structure.
Army, just give him structure. Teach him skills. Get him out there. The army should just be full of sort of emotionalist sociopaths.
I think it is.
Yeah.
That's who goes.
But I think, no, not all of them. That's the problem. I wish we had less good humans in the army and they weren't destroyed by what happened.
Being an emotionalist sociopath, that's a good soldier.
Yeah, and here's what's ironic about it is that this emotionless sociopath, they put him in possibly the most compassionate position in the Army. He was a combat medic.
Yeah, and yeah. Didn't he say that he never wanted to draw blood?
He couldn't draw blood. Like, he didn't. That's also very ironic, is that he couldn't. He just couldn't stand to see a drop of blood
because he's pushing down the memories of his first.
He's
kill.
Pushing made him rock down. Hard,
and of course the alcoholism does not stop. He actually had a suitcase that was fashioned into a kind of bar. He would open it up, and there was a martini shaker, a stir, all kinds of liquor in there.
Again, it sounds like a fucking 80s comedy.
He's so cool. I know. That's the thing.
Sounds like Stripes.
Yeah, and he spent his weekends, his first few, for a little while, he spent most of his weekends. And by the way, he was stationed in Germany. This was all in a Baumholder in West Germany. He spent his weekends just getting wasted and sitting on his bunk listening into Black Sabbath.
Having a good goddamn time. Man, Dahmer. Yeah, that's
And
that's
you envy fun. His life.
At this point, it's not so bad, minus the murder. And then, of course, the terrible desire to have sex with fetal pigs. But, yeah.
And we know that Dahmer did not kill anyone in Germany. Because as soon as the news came out that, that this guy had killed 17 people and they started going through his history, they're like, oh, fuck. Because he was gone for long stretches of time in Germany. He would disappear for entire weekends, and then he started disappearing past his weekend furloughs. So the German police, they did a huge investigation into all of the murders around Baumholder around that time. And there was one famous unsolved mutilation case, but it was a young girl. So it didn't fit.
Yeah,
Jeffrey's
and he can't even
MO.
Look at a booby.
No.
Isn't that
he gets driven insane by a booby. He's like, give me a severed penis any day.
And so he was very, he kept to himself, except occasionally he would get belligerently drunk and just start hurling racial slurs at all the black soldiers.
It's interesting, though, because, like you said, most of his victims were black or Hispanic.
Yeah. No, it's because he was desperately in love with them.
Yeah, well, he was in love with them, and also it's an intelligent, like we were talking about with the black serial killer case, they're the less dead, they're even lesser than the less dead. Less dead tend to be prostitutes and things like that.
Well, what Jeffrey said later on is the reason why he started killing black people and Hispanic people is that that's what he found most attractive, because they had the hairless chest that he loved, because Jeffrey was obsessed with torsos. Out of everything else, that was what he focused on the most. That's what he loved, was the chest of
him. Yeah, who loves it? I love it. I understand a good man's chest.
Oh,
it's something nice. It's like a plate. It's like a big old serving tray. When you get up there, the nipples are like two little fucking Swedish meatballs. You go ding, 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 ding. Now you stick your finger in the belly button. Oh, I know everything about a men's chest.
So after, with 9 months...
You see everything as a plate, huh? Yeah. You could deliver some food on that. Yep.
Well, excuse me, I gotta go drive my car, which is like a little moving restaurant. So I'll see
it's
you
like
soon.
A little plate. I love that plate over there. You can put a bunch of hamburgers. That's a book. That is a book. Yeah, you can put food on there.
So Jeff, too drunk for the Army, was discharged.
The name of a Pauly Shore movie.
Jeff, too drunk for the Army.
He was discharged with 9 months to serve, and as he was leaving his bunk, he turned around and turned to his bunkmates and said, "Someday you'll hear about me again."
Yikes.
Which I kind of like, of course, since he was drunk all the time, I kind of see it as more like, you haven't heard the last of old Jeff Dahmer. Then just gets in the car.
Jeff, if you could please just go.
Fuck you.
Fuck me. Yes. If you could just go, give me the keys.
His squad leader, his name was David G. Goss, drove him to the airport. And he said in a conversation, he said, "There was something bugging him in Germany. I knew he had a troubled past, and I knew he had something that was gnawing at him. He'd say there was something he couldn't talk about."
That is correct.
And you know what you do when some guy who's drunk mumbling about something that he can't talk about? Don't pick at it.
Don't pick at it.
You don't need to know. You don't need to know that information.
No, because he tells you.
If he was super wasted, he'd just tell you. If it was a thing that he could, that it was like a fun secret, he'd be telling you over and over again every time he got drunk. But because he's not telling you, it's a really dark one that you are then implicated.
Yeah. Usually you don't want to talk about like, "Oh, I saw my mom. I walked into my mom and my dad having sex. It was so gross." Like, that's something you might bring up.
But you'd even laugh about it.
But then you can laugh about it,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it's
but
all
if
like you'd say you try to remove your own rib so you could suck your own dick. Like, that's like a bad secret.
Yeah.
That's a bad one.
That would be interesting, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would it be?
Well, I mean, yeah, don't pry too much, though, because if Dahmer tells you that he killed a bunch of people, now you're involved and you got to do, you got to work. You got to do a whole bunch of work.
Yeah, now that's paperwork.
Yeah, it's not fun.
And so after being discharged from the Army, they gave him a ticket to anywhere he wanted to go in the continental United States.
And
so,
where did he choose?
Miami, Florida.
Wow. Did he have the mustache at this time?
I don't know. What
Bienvenido.
I think maybe, you know, a lot of guys get out of the Army, they grow facial hair. It's a natural reaction.
He's down there, he's right next to Cuba. You know what I mean? I bet he's got one of those white shirts on with the embroidery on the sides of him. He's eating plantains.
Well, I don't know.
My duros.
Yeah. I mean, it's more like he's working in a sandwich shop and living at a seedy motel.
Miami.
So he gets evicted from the motel, of course. He lives on the beach for a while. Figures Miami, after a year, figures Miami isn't for him. Moves back in with his...
He didn't get along in Miami?
He didn't. He didn't get along
in
Miami. That's
so crazy. But it's the land of butts and fluorescent swimsuits.
He's a simple Midwest guy. It's too much for him.
And, like, you know, he likes the idea. He's like, oh, I hear everybody jogs in Miami. But then he didn't realize that they jog real fast. And, like, they're all muscular. And he's like, he needs a fatter guy to, try to slim down.
All he did was the tiny boys.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And so he moved back in.
I just hate the way I said that.
Yeah, I know.
All he did was the tiny boys.
Yeah. All he did was the tiny boys.
Bing, 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 ba, ding, ding,
ding. I just picture him sucking down a huge margarita
drink.
A coconut. Yeah.
I just can't get drunk enough on rum.
Isn't that
it's just too much rum too and much, Midori in this.
Yeah, too much sugar. I think it's something with the sugar. I got to go back to Wisconsin.
Yep. And he does. First he goes back to Ohio to live with his father and his stepmother. Mm. And, of course, he doesn't stop drinking. He's unemployed. He's getting into bar fights constantly. He broke a couple ribs. He's getting gashes all over his face. And, of course, his father says, I can't handle him anymore. My bitch of a wife is fucking talking about him all the time, getting on my ass about it.
I'm going to say Sherry was right about this one.
You think?
Sociopath.
She also had a nut against David too.
She had a nut against David.
Let's just say David didn't do much either to help the situation.
Yeah.
All right. This is like, we literally, because it's like, if anybody could have reached out to Jeffrey, it probably could have been him.
Yeah.
If a brother, this is like,
it's not a younger brother's job to save his older brother from killing a bunch of people.
I would say, you know your brothers better than they know themselves just because you've been around them for so long.
Yeah.
If you saw them doing something real crooked, you'd at least tell mom and dad.
Yeah, I
suppose. You'd do something. But anyways, it's just like, but yeah, Sherry was right. Because Jeffrey Dahmer was also probably like drunk, like just staring at shit half the time. Walking around just going like, the body's just won't go away. You know, like just saying just the random sentences like that.
Definitely.
So he moved in with his grandmother, Catherine Dahmer.
And that's not depressing at all.
No, is he 23 years old at this time?
Yeah, he's about 23.
He just left Miami to go live with his grandmother.
In West Allis, Wisconsin. This is when he shows up in Wisconsin. He lives in his grandmother's basement. He gets a job at the Milwaukee Blood Plasma Center, which is strange considering how in the Army he couldn't even prick someone with a needle to draw
blood. Now he's wearing bags of blood like they're an eye mask falling asleep in the back room. You know, telling me like, oh, you guys want to make a raspberry milkshake and then cut and slicing them open and throwing them all over each other.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So in 1982, life was pretty uneventful for a little while, but in 1982, he was charged with drunken disorderly conduct, and according to the police report, he did lower his pants in the presence of approximately 25 people, including women and children.
He really ramped up.
Yeah, that was at a state fair, by the way.
But that wasn't for erotic purposes. He was just blackout drunk.
Yeah, he was just blackout drunk. He was fined $25 for that.
That's it?
Yeah.
Different times. Different times. Wow, $25 for a mooning.
$25, yeah. And so 4 years goes by, and in 1985, and I think this is when we should end part one, that's when he gets a job at the Ambrosia Chocolate Company.
Yeah.
Oh, there's bones in the chocolate.
Now this doesn't say almonds chocolate.
I don't know. It's just like, oh, it kind of tastes like a knuckle.
Yeah.
Don't ask me how I know.
You know how much he got paid at that chocolate factory? One last little fact: $9 an hour.
Unbelievable.
That's, you know how above much that is more than I made when I worked at the Strand.
Yeah, that's great. And that's 85 money?
That's
about $15 an hour.
I checked inflation. It's $19.96 an hour.
No shit.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Good inflation check.
Yeah, thank you.
That was the best inflation check I've ever heard.
Yeah, he worked the night shift 11 p.m. Wow. to 7 a.m. six nights a week with, and this is very important, Saturday evenings off.
Oh, yeah, because that's when Saturday night is all right.
It is. All right. Well, that's Dahmer for you right now, episode one.
God knows how many parts we're going to do this in.
Yeah. This could very well be three.
But it really is true. It's just like it brings up a lot of feelings and nostalgia. It's like this is the guy that just nobody saved. This is the man that nobody saved. I feel sympathy for him, even though he was a fucking... He was a true monster.
Yes.
You know, he was the boogeyman. But yeah. He's no Richard Ramirez. He's no John Wayne Gacy. He's just a... He was caught in a cycle that he couldn't get himself out of, and he had nobody to help him.
Yeah. And he's very... And, you know, he's very unique among serial killers in that he hated killing.
He hated the killing he wanted to get. That's why he had to get blackout drunk to do it.
Yeah. And I think that that really sets him apart as extremely mentally ill.
Process or product killers.
Yeah.
And he was a product killer.
He could have been good guy to work at the morgue, something like that. I mean, he would get fired.
He would make it through the morgue. Yeah.
I mean, there was a time when he was 17 and a local teenage boy died, and he attempted to dig the teenage boy up, but the ground was too hard.
Midwestern winners.
And tomorrow is my birthday, May 1st, which is the number one satanic holiday while Purgis Night. So please, in my honor, go and enjoy yourself by dancing naked outside of your home.
Well, Jeffrey Dahmer did just get arrested and fined $25 for doing that.
Over the age of 18.
Yes. Again, still illegal to dance outside naked. And they're not going to understand your explanation. But I listened to a podcast. And there's a fat one. The fat one told me to dress naked.
Yeah, all I got to say is that's when the cannibalism started.
That podcast over there. He's getting pulled into the cop car. So maybe I'm wrong. But I'm just saying, or at least, you know, just drink a lot. Do something to have fun.
Yeah, just to have fun.
Just have a good time.
All right.
That's the first episode on Dahmer.
At Marcus Parks.
That's right.
At Henry Loves You.
Yep.
On Twitter.
I am at Ben Kissel.
And hail Satan.
Hail Satan. Hail yourselves.
Hail Gein.
Hail constellations.
Hail me!
And a hail Dahmer.
Hail Dahmer.
Hail Dahmer.
I hope he's up in heaven having fun sucking Beethoven's penis.
Yep.